an introduction to next week's Hanukkah extravaganza, I'll say a few words about Hanukkah. And the central theme, one of the central themes of Hanukkah is clearly the theme of miracles. And when we talk about miracles, we're talking about two in specific. One, the miracle of the oil, that they only had enough oil to last one day, and miraculously they were able to light the menorah for 8 days until they were able to get more oil. And the other miracle is the miracle of the war, where you had an army that seemingly was not strong enough to fight against the Yavanim, against the Greeks, and nevertheless they were able to defeat the Greeks and recapture the Beis Hamikdash. And they seem to be, in the sources, two totally separate miracles. If you look, for example, the Gemara in Shabbos, quotes a Braisa, that's source number one. So the Gemara sort of passes over the entire miracle of the war as if it's just part of the story, that it happened to be that they had a war and that's why they didn't have enough oil, and a miracle happened and they had enough oil to light the menorah for 8 days. The war seemingly, all it says is Shegavra Malchus Beis Chashmonai V'Nitzchum Barchu V'la Matzu El Apach Echad Shal Shemen Shayamunach V'Chatzom Shal Kohen Gadol. As if the war is not a major part of the miracle of Chanukah. On the other hand, if you look in Al Anisim, which the text is in source number 9, so the Al Anisim clearly puts the stress on the miracle of the war. Masarta Givorim Biad Halashim, Varabim Biad Me'atim, Mutzvim Biad Zahorim. It was clearly a war which they upheaved Derech HaTeva in a natural order they shouldn't have won, but a nace happened and they were able to win the war. And the only mention of the miracle of the oil is a few words. They lit the candles in the chatzar of the Beis HaMikdash. So you have here the Al-Anisim doesn't even, just sort of passes over the miracle of the oil. And in truth, if we're talking about two different miracles, the timing of the two different miracles should give us a Hanukkah with two different overlapping holidays. On the one hand, if we're talking only about the miracle of the war, so why celebrate it for 8 days? They defeated the Yavanim on Chaf Hei Kislev, and so Hanukkah should be one day, Chaf Hei Kislev, if we're celebrating the miracle of the war, and stop right there. On the other hand, as for the famous question of the Beis Yosef, which we'll get back to in a few minutes, maybe the miracle of the oil should only be after Chaf Hei Kislev, meaning from Chaf of Kislev and on, being that on Chaf Hei Kislev they had enough oil for that particular day. So there was no real nace in terms of the oil. That's the Beis Yosef question. There was no real nace of the oil on the first day of Hanukkah. So the miracle in celebrating the miracle of the oil, that should only be from Chaf of Kislev and on, 7 days. Now, that would be very appealing in terms of answering the question of the Beis Yosef, why is Hanukkah 8 days? But it doesn't really work out, al pi halacha, because, first of all, Hallel, as the Gemara and Pesachim points out, and Rashi gives Hanukkah as the example, you only really say Hallel in certain situations. One of them happens to be if there's persecution and you're saved from that persecution. And Rashi gives Kigon Chanukah. Rashi says Chanukah is an example of Hallel, what we say over Savior from a persecution. But if we're talking about the miracle of the war in terms of defeating the Greeks, the Hallel should only be said on the first day. And in terms of lighting the candles, so we say Bracha of Shas and Nisim. And the Mechaber points out that you only say the bracha of Shas Anisim on a nace that was Yotze Miteva Ha'olam, that really defied natural order. So to say Shas Anisim on the war might not be so appropriate, since it was sort of al derech hateva that they beat out the Yavanim. So although that answer seems to be appealing, that you can split off, that the war was, that we're celebrating the war on the first day and the oil the next 7 days, doesn't really work out with the halacha. So you have to explain, A, why we say halal all 8 days, and B, why we light the candles all 8 days. So in terms of the question of the oil, Right? The famous kasha, the Beis Yosef, you should really only celebrate Hanukkah 7 days, being that they have enough oil for one day. So the Beis Yosef gives three answers to this question. The first answer is that they split up the oil into 8 parts, and every day that the oil lasted 8 times as long as it should have. What we're going to call protracted combustion. It burned longer than it should have. Okay. The second answer he gives is that they poured the oil. Od yishlomer shla'achas shenasnu shemen b'neiros ha'menora tishir nishar ha'pach molekim v'chil. They poured out the oil into the neiros, and then all of a sudden the flask sort of refilled itself. What we're going to call here spontaneous regeneration. Okay. Those are the two basic approaches in terms of how to understand the miracle. And then the third answer he gives, you can understand as either one or the other, that they lit the candles at night. He doesn't tell you what happened, but in the morning they were still full. So either they didn't burn at all, a more extreme form of this protracted combustion approach, or that it did burn down all the way, nobody was watching it, and then somehow miraculously it filled up again. So those are the three answers of the Beis Yosef. There is a sefer, Ner Lemea, who gives 100 answers to this question. He collects, including these three. We're not going to go into all of them. We'll just go into one more. The Taz is under the assumption that you cannot have a miracle. He doesn't use the term miracle. You can't have a bracha of Yesh Me'ayin. It can't come from nowhere. It's got to come from something. So he says the following. The first day, the oil burned, but it burned at a slower rate than it should have. So there was a little bit of oil left. And then, from there, the oil was able to regenerate itself. So the miracle was really the next 7 days. But being that it burned slower, so we see lemafreya. He uses the word lemafreya. We see retroactively that the first day was also a miracle. So why doesn't the Taz just go with the original approach to the Beis Yosef, that the oil just burns slower? So I believe the Taz is under the assumption that in order to have a nes shiyotze miteva olam, so having the oil burn slower is not one of those nisim. It would have to be something like regeneration. The oil would have to regenerate itself. Only that, since the next 7 days we saw a miracle of regeneration, then we can look back and see that the first day was also somewhat of a miracle, and it's worthy to say Shasanisim. But in principle, if it just burns slower, the Taz seems to be under the assumption that that would not constitute enough of a miracle to say Shasanisim. Now, there are those that question this whole idea of having spontaneous regeneration as an explanation for the miracle of the tonic oil. Why? Based on the following logic. We know that in order to light the Neiros in the Beis HaMikdash, you need Shemen Zayis. You can't use corn oil, you can't use canola oil, you can't use motor oil. It has to be Shemen Zayis. Right? So if you have something that didn't come from an olive, you didn't squeeze an olive into a flask, it just appeared as, you know, miraculously in a flask. So that's not Shemen Zayis, that's Shemen Shalmeis. That's miracle oil. It happens to look like olive oil, it happens to taste like olive oil, but it was really created through a miracle. You can't call that Shemen Zayis. Who says this? So it's quoted in the name of Rav Chaim Soloveitchik, the Rav's grandfather. And the Ger Rebbe also is quoted as saying this. We'll see, with a little bit of a nuance. And we'll see that the Shla also had this opinion, not in terms of Hanukkah, but in terms of something else. So the Shla, where does he say it? He says it with respect to yesterday's Torah reading. We know that that Yosef came by Ave Yosef, as Divasamar Alavihem. Yosef told on his brothers that they were doing bad things. What exactly were they doing? So one of the things Rashi says they were doing, they were eating Aver Min HaChai. They were eating from live animals. How could it be that the Shiftei Ka, that the brothers were actually eating live animals? They not only kept, the Avos kept Kol Torah Kula, but this is one of the Zion Mitzvahs B'nai Noach. That everyone who descends from Noach cannot eat Aver Min HaChai, cannot eat from live animals. So the Shla says an interesting suggestion that they created a golem. We know the Gemara says that there is a And there's the concept of a golem that you can use certain Kabbalistic svarim to create something that looks like a human being. And the Gemara says that they used to make animals also using Sefer Yetzirah. So the Shlach says, why not say that here, that the brothers created an animal, a golem animal, and since it was a golem animal, the laws of Eved Menachai or any other laws that apply to animals don't normally apply. And Yosef didn't know about it, so he told them, but at least they can justify the actions of the brothers meeting Eved Menachai. So apparently the Shlach is under the same assumption that if you create something via a miracle, so it doesn't attain the status of what it's trying to replicate. So you create an animal, a golem animal, so the laws of Eved Menachai do not apply to that animal. So the Shlach can also answer here, or he would not follow the Beis Yosef's answer that the oil was spontaneously regenerated, because that would not be valid for Shem and Zayis.
But you also make the same claim, for example, about the mun, that there's no...
Yeah, we'll get to the mun in a little bit. Yeah.
I recall reading that there's one reason, it says that the woman, that Elisha said, you know, the oil,
right,
from the Haftarah for Vayera, she didn't have to take Trumas and Masters.
Right, right, there's a Tosefta like that. They also quote that, we're not going to discuss that, I don't have enough time, but they quote that in the discussion of this issue also. So there's three sources which seem to indicate against what is said in the name of Chaim, what the Shlach says, and what's said in the name of the Ger Rebbe. Now, just incidentally, the Ger Rebbe says, we quoted the Taz a few minutes ago, that the Taz says that the only way the regeneration could have happened if there would have been something from nothing. So the Ger Rebbe says that that's what the Taz is driving at, that the Taz is splitting between a miracle that's Yesh Me'ayin and Yesh Me'esh. If you have oil that comes something from nothing, then that would be invalid for the Neir Hanukkah. But if there's oil there and it just grows or it multiplies by itself, that would be valid. That would be considered Shem and Zayis.
Because it came from Shem and Zayis.
Because it came from Shem and Zayis. Which is how he deals with the issue with the Isha Shunamis.
Does that come visible? I mean, every little bit assumes what's there?
Maybe it could be based on that, or it could just be that if it's growing off of Shem and Zayis, then it's Shem, you know, it's closer to Shem and Zayis than if it just appeared out of nowhere. So the first source, which seems to indicate that the miracles can actually attain the status of what they're trying to replicate, is the Gemara in Menachos, as per Rabbeinu Tam. So the Gemara, Rav Zeir asks the following question: what if you have wheat that falls out of the clouds? What's the halacha? So Gemara says, what are we talking about? So Ilam Menachos, if we're talking about using them for a korban mincha, amai lo, what's the problem? You have wheat falling out of the clouds. No, you can use that for menachos. Elamai, it's talking about l'shtei halechem. For the korban shtei halechem, what's the problem? Because the Torah says it has to be mimosho seichem, it has to be from within your midst. So the Rav Zeir is not sure, is from the clouds above Eretz Yisrael, is that considered like chutz laretz, from outside of your midst? Or is that the clouds of Eretz Yisrael, are they within your midst as well? So the big question is, how did these wheat kernels get into the clouds in the first place? So Rashi says, you know, the same way we have acid rain, they had wheat rain. Somehow, when the water evaporated and ended up in the clouds, it took a whole boat of carrying some wheat kernels, and so wheat started falling out of the sky. So Tosus, Rabbeinu Tam doesn't like that. Why? Because if these wheat kernels are from Chutz Laretz, so why would you consider them for Shtei Halechem? And if they're from Eretz Yisrael, why would the fact that they went into the clouds make it no good? So Rabbeinu Tam comes along and says, no, these wheat kernels didn't evaporate into the clouds. They got there al yedei neis. HaKadosh Baruch Hu put wheat kernels into the cloud is a miracle. It's a theoretical case. And now it starts raining wheat kernels. Can you use these for menachos? Can you use these for shtei halechem? So the Gemara says, menachos, not a problem. Shtei halechem, it's a question whether that's considered mimosh foseichem or not. Is that considered from within your midst or not? But from the fact that you can use these for menachos, so you see from Rabbeinu Tam that if wheat kernels appear out of nowhere through a miracle, that is considered wheat, because you can't use menachos, you can't make it out of corn, it has to be from wheat, And since these kernels are considered wheat kernels, so we see that al pi halacha, something that is born out through a miracle attains the status of what it's trying to replicate. So I saw last year, around Hanukkah time, the Daf Yomi was on Menachos, Daf Samach Tes, so one of the newsletters, Maoris HaDaf Yomi, quoted from Rav Chaim's grandson, Rav Baruch Soloveitchik, based on this Rabbeinu Tam, you can't really say what Rav Chaim said. He denies that Rav Chaim ever said it. This apparently is a dispute that dates back all the way to the days of Rav Chaim, whether Rav Chaim ever said it. But there are Talmidei Chachamim who hold, whether Rav Chaim said it or not, there are others who held that he should have said it, even if he didn't. So this Rabbeinu Tam seems to go against, that idea. So the Ger Rebbe, who was also of the same opinion, says the following. This is not a raya. The Kli Chemda actually says it. He says the following, that if the rain clouds would have rained menachos out of the sky, so that, the Gemara would have said, that would have been a problem. And similarly, if olive oil would have appeared in the Beis HaMikdash at the time when they, not olive oil, sorry, olives would have appeared in the Beis HaMikdash at the time when they had nothing to light with,
that would have been fine.
The only thing is that this is olive oil. And as the Ger Rebbe explains, it's part of a process. So if you have the raw materials that are created through a nes, so those you can use, those you consider as valid raw materials. But the finished product of something, that already is considered something as synthetic, and you can't use it, and you can't assume that it's that it attains the status of what it's trying to replicate. So olives would have been good, but olive oil is no good. Similarly, the wheat kernels are good for the menachos, but if the menachos themselves would have fallen out of the sky, that would have been no good. There are two other sources which you can't say this answer that the Ger Rebbe said. The Gemara Nida tells us about a beged, a garment, let's say it was a woolen garment, and one thread of linen got sewn into the garment, and we can't find it now. So that garment is considered shat in al pi halacha. You can't wear that garment. What can you do with it? So the Gemara says you can use it for tachrichin lemeis. You can bury a body in this garment. Use it for shrouds. So Rav Yosef comes along and says, Zos omeres mitzvos betelos lasu lava. You see from here that mitzvos do not apply in the world to come. What does this mean? So the Ritva explains, this is already in Tosus, but the Ritva explains it a little clearer, that we're talking about the time of Tfiyas HaMesim, and the Gemara in Ksuva says that at the time of Tfiyas HaMesim, a miracle will happen, that not only will the people be reincarnated, but they'll come back in the same clothes that they were buried in. So if you hold that mitzvos are not betelos lasu lava, meaning people have to keep mitzvos, in the time of Tfiyas HaMesim, you couldn't bury somebody in the garment that has shatnez, because he'll be reincarnated in those clothing, and he'll be over the issur shatnez, he'd have to take off the clothing right away when he's reincarnated. But if you hold mitzvos betelos lasu lava, if you hold that the mitzvos do not apply at the time of Tfiyas HaMesim, so you can bury the mace in this garment, so even if he comes back in a clothing that has shatnez in it, so that's not a problem, because he doesn't have to keep shatnez at the time of Tfiyas HaMesim. So the question is, but the clothing is not, it's not going to be the same clothing that you bury him in. It's a nes that it comes back in the same clothing that he was buried in. The clothing is going to decompose along with the body. So what happens? It's a nes that the beged is going to be reconstituted along with the reincarnation of the person. So for shatnez, it's not just the beged. It has to have wool and linen in it. And we're talking here only about one thread of linen. So obviously the reincarnation is going to happen with the same garment that has the one thread of linen in it. That one thread of linen is going to be through a miracle. Same with the wool. So the wool is considered wool and the linen is considered linen, even though it was all produced through a miracle. So you see from the Ritva, the way the Ritva explained in the Gemara, that something that was born through a miracle does attain the status of what it's trying to replicate. Otherwise you can't say that the person is going to be over the Isser of Shatnez had you assumed that mitzvos are not the telos lasu lava. The third proof is the Gemara in Brachos. The Gemara in Brachos says, Moshe tikin li Yisrael birchas hazon Bishashi Yarid Lahem Man. That Moshe instituted Birchas HaMazon at the time that the man was falling. So the indication is that Moshe ate man. He didn't institute Birchas HaMazon. Birchas HaMazon is Daraisa. He wrote the text for the first bracha of Birchas HaMazon. So he ate man, and he made Birchas HaMazon on the man. And Rav Yosef Engel in the Gilyoni HaShas and Brachos there asks, well, but man is not bread. You need bread to make Birchas HaMazon. So he says that the Gemara in Yuma tells us that the man can taste whatever you want it to taste like. There's one man damer that it will even feel like whatever you want it to taste like. It will also take on that whole status. So he says that Moshe Rabbeinu obviously wanted to eat bread. He took the man. Now it tastes like bread. It looks like bread, and he ate it, and he made Birchas HaMazon on the man. So he himself says, you see from here that the miracles do attain the status of what they're trying to replicate. Otherwise, you couldn't call man lechem. He quotes other achronim who indicate otherwise. They talk about what bracha you make on the man, since it's not motzi lechem in haaretz. But he himself says that this seems to be a raya that it does take on the status of what it's trying to replicate. So we have three sources that seem to indicate this way, that a miracle can take on the status of what it's trying to replicate, which would be, the Beis Yosef obviously holds that way, because he said that he entertains at least the possibility that the oil could have been spontaneously regenerated. But the question is, the logic of the other side, the Chaim and the Shlach and the Ger Rebbe, seems to be more compelling, meaning it's not olive oil, it's a synthetic. So why exactly should it be kosher? So I thought the answer is based on a comment of the Ramban in Parshas Bo. The Ramban tells us, this is the underlined part in source 7, She'ein la'adam chelet v'toras Moshe Rabbeinu ad she'namen b'chol d'vareidu u'mikreinu she'kulam nisim ein b'hem teva u'mihago shel olam b'im b'rabim b'im yachim. That we have to believe that everything that happens in the world, whether it looks like a nes, whether it doesn't look like a nes, everything is really a nes. There's no such thing as teva and minhago shalom, meaning that HaKadosh Baruch Hu runs the world on a day-to-day basis. Everything is from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. He runs the world in what we perceive as natural order, but in truth, it's really all done through him, and everything is a nes. There's no difference between an open miracle, what we call a nes nigla or a nes nistar. It's really all a miracle. Just he decides to normally run the world in the natural order. And perhaps you can extend this, as this is also a pi halacha. What's the difference if you have a flask that contains olive oil, and that's how you got your olive oil, or that a Kadosh Baruch Hu made a nes, and he made an olive tree grow, and you were able to take the olives off the tree and squeeze the olives and make olive oil. It's all one and the same thing if you assume that Nes and Teva are so interrelated. But if that's the case, why exactly does HaKadosh Baruch Hu perform Nisim Geluyim? If there's really no difference between a Nes Nigla and a Nes Nistar, why does HaKadosh Baruch Hu bother with the Nes Nigla? He wants to run the world in natural order. So he says, and this is one line up from there, I mean, Anisim HaGadol and HaMefursam, through the great miracles, the open miracles, Adam Modeb and Nisim HaNistarim, that the Nisim HaGaluyim are really there to focus us in on those Nisim HaNistarim, Shehem Yisod HaTorah Kula. That really our goal is to seek out the hidden miracles. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu has to perform open miracles to clue us in on those. And it works both ways. Meaning that if you assume that miracles, if the Teva and Nisim are so interrelated, and somebody who looks at open miracles is automatically going to see the Nisim HaNistarim, so somebody who is starting from the perception that everything has to be Al Pi Teva, you have to understand everything has to be understood as something scientific, so you'll never even see the Nisim HaGaluyim. And this is what Rabbeinu Bachai says in his introduction to Parshas Maaseh. And he says, quotes from Mishlei, Reishis Chachma, Kenei Chachma, that in order, he says, in order to learn Shar Chachmos, the other bodies of knowledge, one should start with the perception of the Torah. Why? Because what happens is the other sciences believe they kept HaKadosh Baruch Hu out of their body of knowledge, and they're going to try to explain everything al pi teva. And something like Kriyas Yam Suf, they'll also explain that was some natural phenomenon, and they'll figure out a way that it should happen. And that's what he says. The word teva, which we use to refer to nature, he says the word teva comes from the word toveya, to sink. Because if you start with the perception that everything is teva, you're going to end up sinking in Yevein Mitzvoso, in its murky waters. And of course, yeah.
There was somebody named Isaac Breuer, the grandfather of Breuer from Washington.
Yeah.
He wrote a discussion about the concept of miracle, and he said that Nais is actually a revelation of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's why Har Sinai is the biggest Nais, because it was the greatest.
Right.
And he ended Gal Einai Vabita Nifosechet. Fits in very nicely with this.
Right, yeah. That's exactly what the Ramban's driving at, that we're supposed to see everything as a miracle through the Nisim HaGaluyim. So just to give a little bit of an example, we see this in scientists nowadays, that they have this, that they start with the perception that everything has to be scientific, and they can stare an open miracle right in their face, and they'll have to come up with some scientific explanation. So many of us heard of Francis Crick. He was just nifter a few months
sure.
ago. So he was a Nobel Prize winner, and he didn't win the Nobel Prize for this, but he also, the famous Watson-Crick DNA model is named after Crick. So he wrote a book called Life Itself, about the origins of life. So until around 1859, it didn't bother people. Why? Because they assumed that, you leave a piece of meat out and some maggots grow on it, or you have bread and mold grows on it, and those things, once you assume the theory of evolution, it's not such a big deal. The little creatures eventually evolve into mice, which is, et cetera, et cetera, and that's what we are today. That's what everyone believed until 1859, when this theory was pasteurized by Louis Pasteur, who proved that there's no such thing as spontaneous generation. Not what we're talking about, but different type of spontaneous generation. So they were at a loss, they're still at a loss, as to explain how life could have originated. We're in 2004, with all the technology we have, they can't even create a single-celled organism. So in his book, Life Itself, Crick, the first half he devotes to explaining the previous theories and why they're all no good. So he writes, "An honest man, armed with all the knowledge available to us now, could only state that in some sense the origin of life appears at the moment to be almost a miracle. So many are the conditions..." This is not on the Maamar Kamos. "So many are the conditions which would have had to have been satisfied to get it going." Meaning that Earth, planet Earth, is not equipped, or never was equipped, with the potential to actually produce life from scratch. Okay, but he's not willing to admit that it was, meaning if you are a scientist and you start talking about God, so they'll take away his Nobel Prize. So he comes up with a new theory. What's the theory? Panspermia. What happened is, and this is very hard to disprove, it seems, that, okay, life couldn't have originated here, but you figure that somewhere else it must have originated, some far out galaxy somewhere. And those people, the same way we're advanced now, this could have happened billions of years ago, so they're more advanced than they came to Earth in their spaceships or whatever they had. And these aliens seeded our planet with life, and that's what we are today. That's what everything we see around us, all of life, is from these aliens that came, it was like their science experiment. They wanted to see if life would grow on other planets. Which seems a little bit far out, But he's not the only one who holds to this. If you do a Google search, you'll get 31,000 hits for panspermia. So And if you look into the real motivations behind all those Mars explorations, especially the one, the British one, you'll see that. That's why, meaning if these aliens came and seeded our planet, they probably also did the same thing to Mars. So they're looking for some clues as to how this could have happened. Now, why can't they just be intellectually honest and say that
it was an ace,
that HaKadosh Baruch Hu created life? Because Rabbeinu Bachai is right, that if somebody starts with the perception that everything has to be Teva, they want to be able to see an open miracle when it's right in front of their faces. And this really dates back all the way to the time of the Yevanim, this attitude. What the Rabbeinu Bachai is quoting, the Kidmos HaOlam, is Aristotle's theory that the world always existed, yeah?
Actually, goes even further back to the Chartumay Mitzrayim. They did the same thing with Moshe. They tried to interpret everything through Kishon.
Right. Right. And this is really the persecution that the Greeks imposed on the Yisraelim at the time of Chanukah. We read in Al Nisim that they wanted to Lashkicham Torah Sechel, Habiru Amitakarit Sunakha. How exactly did they do that? So the Medrash says that they used to tell the Bnei Yisrael to write Kisul Lachem Al Keren Shur, Ein Lachem Chelek Beilkei Yisrael. They tried to have them deny God. And you'd have to assume that they used these methods to try to rationalize how all the world could exist without a divine being. And the miracle of Chanukah, in a way, marks the defeat of this way of life. So what is it we're celebrating? So on the one hand, we're celebrating the miracle of the oil. But then again, we have that question, why is there no mention of the Al Nisim? And why do we say Hallel for all 8 days? So the Maharal says that the primary miracle is the miracle of the war, the Nes Nistar, the one that we might not have necessarily seen as a miracle. And the miracle of the oil was just there to reveal to us how significant the miracle of the war really was. In fact, the Ma'ari Asad, in Tshuvas Yehuda Yala, he says the following idea. We say in Moshe Tzur, B'nei Vina Yemei Shmona Kavushir Renan. Who are these B'nei Vina? Who are these people of knowledge? So he says, B'nei Vina, Yemei Shmona Kavushir Renan, people who understand, Mevinim, people of knowledge, understood that since the miracle of the oil lasted for 8 days, that was really a sign that it was worthy to celebrate the miracle of the war for 8 days as opposed to one, which should have normally been celebrated. So then what's the purpose of the lighting? So if you go back to the Ramban says that since we don't see miracles in every generation, we don't see these Nisan Gluyim in every generation. So there are certain mitzvos which are there to remind us of Nisan Gluyim, because we need the Nisan Gluyim to focus us in on the Nisim HaNistar. So in the same light, Chazal saw fit to institute the lighting of the candles in 8 days to clue us in on the Nisim HaNistar. And the goal of the lighting is to really bring out the Nes Nistar, the Nes of the war, which is what we're really celebrating. That's what we're saying Hallel on. And perhaps that's why there's no mention of the miracle of the oil in the Al Nisim. Because if you look in Al Nisim, look exactly where it is, and I put this on the sheet. So you find it in benching, in the bracha, ala aretz ve'ala mazon. And right before that, we say, ala chilas mazon sha'ata zon, umefarne sosonu tamid, on the food that we get, that you're feeding us all the time, b'chol yom, b'chol eis, b'chol shah, every day, every hour, and every moment. And similarly, in the bracha of modim, we say the same thing. Al nisecha shebechol yom imanu, on the everyday nisim, al nechlosecha shebechol eis erev avokir v'tzorayim. We're talking about the miracles that happen every day. The nes of the war is more in line with the nisim that happen to us every day, the things we're supposed to appreciate every single day. And in this way, our goal should be internalized on Chanukah, this idea that really everything is a nes. We should try to see God's hand in everyday events. And in this merit, we should see a Nes Nigla in the coming of Mashiach Meher V'Yameinu. Yeah?
I just want to mention, many years ago, Rabbi Dr. Meir Feldblum spoke here at Shabbos Chanukah, and he mentioned, he took this notion of the Maharal, and he used it to explain, you know, the Kofrim tried to say, well, there was no Nes Shemin because it wasn't mentioned Josephus, so they had George like Grace. And he said that basically, Bizman HaBayis, Bizman HaBayis Chashmonoi, because the Nes Shemen was just to be Mara on the Nes Milchama, so the Iker celebration was the Nitzacha.
Right.
Because the Nes Shemen was just Mara that, that this is. He says it was only after the Churban that we then focused on the Nes Shemen, because that was all that was left. But really, and this is from Zayi of the Maral, that the Iker Chagiga was because of the Nitzacha.
Yeah.
I was thinking of Adam Harishon. Had he known of this argument about the synthetic oil and how it's not valid, it's not the real thing, he might have been able to argue for himself. He wasn't born Madera Hateva.
Yeah,
therefore,
I was
why
thinking
am I
about
responsible? I'm a synthetic man.
Right. I was thinking about that in terms of the Tchias HaMesim issue, that maybe the two issues are interrelated. If you hold that mitzvahs betelos lasid lavo, so maybe the reason why you're holding mitzvahs betelos lasid lavo is because the person who's reincarnated isn't really a person. You have to say somewhere that something is real. Everything was created from Jesus made
gracious. Except the problem is that Chava couldn't make that argument, and since she's his wife, he's got to go along anyways.
Well, this might also relate to what it says. The Martha said, Rabbi Yochanan said, Kiddush HaMeis Nasa Chavshim, not mitzvahs. So he says the shot might be, yeah, mitzvahs are not potatoes, but for somebody who's already passed away, they're potatoes, because kibbutz hamesh has a chavshim and a mitzvah. So that doesn't matter whether it wouldn't be a raya for or against kibbutz harim then, because it's just not shaykh.
Right. Yeah, that could be. That could be the way around that gemara either. Yeah.
I thought on the
recall,
what one could simply say is, when we say this kibbutz hamesh, we don't know exactly when that's going to be. So which person are we worried about bearing in Tachrikun?
Oh, yeah.
So maybe the guy died from yesterday.
It could be, but the Ritva invokes the Gemara in Ksuvus that only because he doesn't say that we're worried that there's amazing going to happen a minute from now. He says that Nace is going to happen, and he's going to be reincarnated. Otherwise,
well, no, that would be an Nace anyway. The fact that the guy who died yesterday, if he comes back today,
right?
Doesn't matter if he comes back today or 1,000 years from now. That's a pretty big miracle.
Right.
The fact that, but it may very well be that's real shyness.